Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, I'm not sure if I could get away with playing the Jeopardy time clock song. You know, that song that, you know, kind of plays to make you, you know, let you know you only got so many seconds before you can answer the question or finish what you have to get done. And so just try to think in mind, when I say it's now or never, folks, that tune is playing, okay? I don't want to infringe on copyright, so I won't play it, but you know it, and you can play it in your head. Anyway, I want to thank you for listening, and this happens to be the 994th episode of Reclaiming the Republic. And so as we plow forward to 1,000, we hope that it's been a good ride. We hope it's one. Actually, it's not that I care regarding whether I'm entertaining or not, whether I'm funny. As my wife says, only I think I'm funny. And for the most part, she's probably correct. I mean, I've been tempted to say all sorts of, you know, corny or the typical play on the stuff. You know, hey, there's a message for you, and I want you to make sure you get this because you're not aware of the fact that your car warranty is almost up and you need to renew that thing. So call those people back. I think stuff like that. But anyway, let me move forward. I actually got called by a friend who kind of commented or called me out, kind of, said, hey, GR, I remember a long time ago, because apparently he heard an episode where I kind of downplay, I downplay everything to let everybody know it's the Constitution. We have to center completely on the Constitution. But I did make a comment that the greatest problem America is facing, this was back in the early 2000s, because voter fraud and election fraud was rampant it's been rampant for a long time, folks. The fact that we tolerate that these things exist, the fact that nobody, show me any records, arrest records and incarceration records of people who have violated this. Go all the way back to Landslide Linden in the 1950s. We know for a fact that those people who filled in that book violated voter law. Why is it that we've taken a blind eye and turned our back towards this? So I made this comment. It was really more of a spark of catching up. And that was a starting point for talking to an old friend, because I actually said this at another friend, fellow Marines, because this was a fellow Marine as well, his wedding. He was getting married, and we were all kind of there. And people like, you know, they can count on getting me to stir up the crowd to talk about politics. And so, I mean, I guess I have a reputation for that, or I've obtained one, even back then. But if you really think about it, we've had voter fraud and election fraud. And the reason I think this came to be is he's probably going to be watching 2,000 Mules or what have you. It just so happens that we're, you know, our co-friend, the wedding was in the, I thought it was maybe 2000, 2001, something like that. But that being said, the point is that, you know, even though there's all sorts of overwhelming data, we've had this, Project Veritas has exposed this. There have been all different types of efforts that have exposed voter fraud. And folks, nobody's going to jail. No one's doing the perp walk. They know they're getting away with murder. And why is that? Why is it that both parties seem to, you know, pull back on the reins and nobody makes this a real issue? Why is that? I'll let you answer that, because bottom line, when you find the answer, you might start to begin to find how deep the deep state goes into realms that the people that are a part of the deep state don't even recognize or understand how they're a part of the deep state, and they would swear up and down that they're not a part of it. And in their mind and paradigm, they're not. It's not like they know what they do. They're just following the directions of what has to get done as far as their ideology. And in a lot of ways, there is a shared ideology I point this out quite a bit, that there's a shared ideology between both what I would call the quote-unquote conservatives and the progressives, because, you know, there are conservatives out there that want to actually constrain and tell you, you know, if you use that word, this is what it means. Like they have the ultimate authority of defining the word convention. And anybody that uses the word convention means that they're for an Article 5 convention. You know, apparently none of these folks that are in this conservative organization or organizations that have this mind model or this, I'll call it mind control or thought control or word control, whatever. Because, look, I mean, another C word that the progressives use is conspiracy. So there's a conspiracy C word, and then there's the conservative convention C word. And I'm going, what's the difference? What's the difference between either side that says you can't use these words? It's wrong. And as a matter of fact, these words exist for a reason. And these words actually have a much broader interpretation, a broader definition and so forth. And when they try to redefine it, that anybody uses that word is either, you know, a foaming at the mouth, you know, con supporter, or a foaming at the mouth, you know, government conspiracy theorist wacko that has no, you know, no founding on common sense, logic, and reason. And I'm going, you know what? We're in trouble because these are the people that are actually trying to inject control into our lives, just like government. Anyway, we don't have any interviews on the near horizon, so we're going to get into content as fast as we possibly can. And as you know, this show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. What I probably need to do is I probably need to put up a frequently asked questions page so people can understand, you know, the music, a lot of the little things that, you know, I've made decisions on, why this, why that, so that they don't necessarily have to worry or send me some questions or feedback onto those types of things. I would prefer diving into the, maybe let's call it the deeper subjects of what we have to do, where we're going, and how we got here, and how we're going to get out of this mess. With that being said, I can't emphasize enough for everybody, anybody and everybody that's interested in including constitutional education with your organization, take some time and go to constitutioneducation.us. And that is the Keith Broder's website in some of the classes and some of the education that he has done. Please check it out. And please, by all means, send him some love if you can, because I think he needs some support. And if you want to use his stuff, make sure you give him credit. Because I think that when people, you know, put a little labor into something, they deserve a little bit of credit. The other endorsement I want to provide you is RadioDustCovers.com. If you've got expensive equipment, expensive gear, then by all means, let's go out of our way in trying to make that stuff last. I know you work hard for your money, and so does Stan Kluet. And so Stan Kluet offers a variety and even offers custom radio dust covers. We just call them radio dust covers, but dust covers for your ammo reloading and whatever it is that you believe needs to be protected from dust, smoke, mites, what have you, that can actually cause harm or decay or just doggone ruin your good, expensive equipment and or things. We also have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And let's dive forward with some content. Now, the last time we talked about some properties and so forth. And so some of the stuff that we kind of went through, clearly I did not cover some of or all of these either petitions and or some of the content and so forth. So what we want to do is actually cover some of the petitions. And I haven't gone back to some of the older stuff, but what I'm doing is moving forward, I'm making sure that we at least cover, I have to take that back. I did go back and take care of some of the petitions on some recently covered stuff that we kind of have mentioned. And so I went in and filled those things in. So what we're going to do today is we're going to actually cover the petitions of the content that we've covered, and then we're going to move forward on the property. So we're in the realms of just kind of getting our arms and heads around how we can start reinforcing and actually get back to full protection of our property rights. Remember, the whole object, the two, not just the whole, but the primary two objects of government are to protect our lives and to protect our property. And so I can't emphasize enough why it's important that these folks, because it's proven, it doesn't take long for people to lose sight of what the heck, you know, they're there for. And next thing you know, they think they're gods. And next thing you know, they want to take your stuff. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. And as a matter of fact, there's a design, there's an intent, and there's, you know, purposes for what they're supposed to be doing. This is why we have enumerated constitutions, right? I mean, to ensure that they stay within the boundaries of the Constitution in governance. Remember, we are a government for and by the people, or it is that our government is to govern us by the consent of the governed. That's us. And so as we create our government at the local level, then our government at the local level gets involved in creating or interfacing with government above us and so forth. When we freed ourselves from Britain, we actually had to get organized, and we actually had to create what we call, some people call, a national government, and what I would refer to as the general government, because that's what they called it back in those days. They called it the general government. So anyway, when we come back, we're going to dive into property, personal property, and some of the petitions. Actually, we'll start off with the petitions first. We will be right back after these two promos. Hang in there. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the first petition that we've added to what we've already covered, and this really goes to the petition for the conscientious objection and or the right of conscience or conscience and property, because as Madison stated, there's probably no more precious property that we possess than, you know, our conscience, our opinions, our ideas, those types of things. And so this petition basically, and again, these are, you know, kind of a framework or enough words or verbiage to help you understand the type and how to get started on creating these petitions. If it's not enough, because as a matter of fact, we, you know, somebody, you know, on the radio here, like myself, can easily marginalize what it takes to do something by just, you know, simplifying something in a paragraph or so, when it's probably going to take pages and pages to do these things in some cases. So I don't necessarily want you to be wrapped around the axle. Just understand the intent and or the context and or the substance of the petition. And in this particular case, this is what this petition really needs to do. And it's a right of conscience. Basically, it has to declare or get the state to declare that a right of conscience is a fundamental inalienable right that cannot be tied to religion alone. It can be ideological, political, scientific, or emotional, and no government under the jurisdiction of the United States Constitution for the United States can compel a person or a parent to personally act, to take action, or to direct their children or those under their charge to receive a service or benefit, nor can they be taxed or punished for doing so. Now, we have to add to this, because one of the things that, you know, it just dawned on me as I was reading this, that even though we have these inalienable rights and we have the right of conscience, a person does not have a right of conscience if their ideology, and so this is founded in the framers' works and so forth, if their ideology or religion basically does not allow, you know, liberty and other people to be free. In other words, you can't be a communist, you can't be an Islamist, and be, you know, in the United States and have the right of conscience. Because bottom line, folks, those folks don't care about your rights. They believe you should be compelled. They're on the other end of the spectrum. They're not wired, because of their wiring, they're not fit. That's a better way of saying this. Because of their wiring, because of their paradigm, they're not fit to thrive or to live in a, what we'll call, an environment or a nation of liberty. Now, there is thought and there's consideration of allowing inhabitants to be here, but the framers were pretty clear. Islamists, communists, those types of people. Let's look at a communist, because most people go, well, that's just a political. No, it's not a political affiliation. This is a political activist. Any and every communist is an activist in trying to overturn the existing government. So let's back up a second. What is your responsibility as a citizen? Your responsibility of a citizen, as a citizen, is to support and defend the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic, which means it's okay to have people here with diverse opinions and ideas and so forth, as long as they support and defend the Constitution. Now, you will never find a communist or an Islamist or a Mohammedan supporting the Constitution, because their affiliation or their loyalty, and they subjugate themselves to a potent or a sovereign which believes in subjugation, that you must be ruled, that you should not have your own choices and your own freedom over these things. So I want to be clear that the right of conscience does have a limitation on ideologies, and it does have a limitation on what we would call this, you know, political framework. Because even after the Revolutionary War, Madison was very well aware, because Madison talks about property. As long as your property isn't a direct harm by it being here in the United States, in other words, it is not antithetical, it is not a destructive paradigm, it is not a destructive conscience, you don't have a destructive religion or ideology that is working to actually destroy this nation and the people that made it, and the people that are living here and thriving, well, then in that particular case, what they did was they executed, they escorted and deported all Tories out of the nation, because if they were loyalists. So, I've been harping on this a lot over the property and over, what's going on in America today, with the fact that America is up for sale and so forth. There is no way. It was not designed. It was never the intent. And the framers, I think it's one of those things that they didn't include it in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights because they couldn't fathom that we would be so destructive. They couldn't fathom that anybody that would be living here under the blanket of liberty, that they would allow the liberty of everybody to actually be destroyed under their hand and watch as servants of the people and as public servants of that Constitution. I mean, it was like, it can't ever get that bad. It can't ever get that evil. Folks, that's where we're at. When I talk about our government orchestrating warfare against our very Constitution, that they are actually acting out an insurrection, these aren't words to trifle with. I would be glad to stand in any federal court to say whether my words are accurate or not. And there's no refuting this. The Constitution's clear. The federal government must protect every state from an invasion. That border must be closed. That we are supposed to support the Constitution. And the fact that we're actually supporting things that are destroying and actually allowing foreign nations to buy our interests? Are you kidding me? We have foreign nations that have insight to our intelligence capabilities and what we're doing and so forth. And supposedly they don't share with other nations. And we're not going to get down Snowden yet. We'll talk about him soon in this category here. But the fact is, they couldn't even fathom that. They couldn't fathom that we would be ever sharing with other foreign entities these things of national interest. They don't have the authority to do that. The only people that they should be sharing national security interests with are state legislators and those sovereigns at the state level. And that's it. And they should be bound and confined. Yeah, I talk to people all the time because people, you were in intel, huh? Wink, wink, nod, nod, tell me a secret, whatever. And as I look at people who have had access that have been public servants to our nation's secrets and the fact that they have shared and provided intelligence, both actionable sources and so forth, to foreigners, it is treason. And what Snowden did was treason. Now, I'm going to talk about this in detail of the oversights of the states because I don't want to get into it now. But the whole point of this next petition that I'm talking about for the right of conscience, because let's keep focused here. The right of conscience, a person, if their ideology is unfit to thrive within a land of liberty because they are working as activists, whether that be a religious activist, political activist, they're the same. And they're trying to overthrow and basically get rid of your liberties and your rights and take away things and compel you. Then they have no right to be here. They're not fit to thrive in the United States. And if they are willing to actually, hold to, their opinions and everything else, but they can't. This is why Mohammedans were banned in America until the 1900s, the 20th century. They were banned. The first mosque wasn't built until, the 1930s? And you know as well as I do that the Mohammedans, as soon as they have an opportunity with enough people in a local area to build a mosque, they will build a mosque. So the fact is that the first mosque that was built just proves how long they were kept at bay and not being allowed to come here and being citizens and establishing themselves. Because their ideology is antithetical to liberty, just like a communist. They believe in compulsion. I'm not judging them. They can have any part of the world that they want that they're thriving in. Saudi Arabia, I don't care. They don't have a right to be here. They don't have a right to ask to come here, and they don't have a right to lie in our citizenship process to say they will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic, and then not do it. See, if you take that oath, that should be like a blood oath. And as far as I'm concerned, we could even look at this as a punishable by capital punishment. You know, put these people to death that are not willing to do this. But I think there's a lot of people that believe that, and I'm just throwing it out there. But I honestly think that we just need to do the right thing and, you know, point them in the direction of where they, or find out where they want to go and send them off that way. We will send them off to some other shore so that they can thrive and do everything that they want in that country that allows that paradigm to exist. And I will tell you that as long as they're constrained within a country, that the problem with Europe has been boozled into allowing these shenanigans of these destructive people to run rickshaw through their country, through that continent. Anyway, we're going to be right back and talk more about personal property. I think I've beaten this petition to death. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so the next petitions, the next series of petitions really deal with, because we kind of talked at a really high level. I know I went into some detail, but there were lots of little things regarding state property and state resources. You have to remember, every state is a sovereign, and every state is sovereign over its entire state. And remember that the 10th Amendment clearly delineates that those things not formally delegated to the federal government in that Constitution are reserved to the states and the people. In other words, if the people didn't delegate to the states those powers, then the states can't even do it. And so that means that those powers are reserved to the people or the people respectively. In other words, if it's not delegated, then they can, you know, govern themselves by their own church and let their church govern their behavior, punishments, and so forth, because that's how it used to be. They used to be able to, you know, excommunicate and what have. I don't know about tar and feathering and that type of stuff, but I don't think there was ever corporal punishment, but there was, you know, serious admonishments. And, you know, if you stepped out of bounds and you weren't behaving and you were living a life that was, you know, in direct conflict with the doctrine of a particular religion or faith, like the Puritans and so forth, then you know, your salvation, your participation in that faith was questioned and possibly excommunicated, or those types of things. And in some places, like in Massachusetts, when they decided to excommunicate you, you were driven out. You couldn't reside in the state anymore. Now, to be clear, the 14th Amendment has secured some individual rights as long as you're not a parasite seeking to destroy the Constitution and seeking to undermine our laws and all of these things to overthrow us, like a communist, Mohammedan, or what have you, then you have, you know, the right to be able to worship, because states can't create. Just remember, the 14th Amendment applies those declaratory statements that protect the individual privileges and immunities within the Constitution and all amendments. Because when they say, you know, the Constitution or a U.S. citizen, that means it covers those things protected by the Constitution. And so you have a right to assemble. You have a right to petition. You have a right to do all of these things. So we want to cover those things. But to be clear, states do have a right because the federal government doesn't. And the question is, you have to start understanding your state constitution. Folks, there's some work. Go get your state constitution. You put it in a Word document. Clean it up. Make it nice and presentable so that you have a current constitution, and start doing the research. Find out where some of these powers came from. Just because it's in your constitution doesn't mean it's constitutional. How was that? Because many things were added to the state's constitution because it was a directive by the federal government. And they didn't know to question it because they never realized and was never told. Most of the states that joined the Union after the original 13, most of them were never told that, hey, you know, just because the federal government says we got to do it doesn't mean it's so and doesn't mean it's constitutional. Now, I was asked, and I'm going to leap right into this because this is a good time to talk about it. I was asked about the Civil Rights Act. There were two Civil Rights Acts that I know of. There were probably more, but there were two that were actually called Civil Rights Acts. The first Civil Rights Act of 1866, which was passed by Congress. Now, keep in mind, if you look at the Civil Rights Act, it may not have had the same kind of teeth that the 1964 Civil Rights Act was. And I could be wrong. It might have been 63 when the origins, when it was passed, what have you. But anyway, the 60s, the racial problems we had in the 1960s with the Civil Rights Act resolving those problems at the government level or the federal government level. Got to remember, acts are acts. The question is, does the act fall within the enumerated powers? Got to remember the Supremacy Clause, that all laws in pursuant to the Constitution. So here's the challenge. Where in the Constitution does the federal government actually establish a protected class for any type of person, whether that be sex, whether that be gender, or same thing, I'm sorry, or I'm thinking disability, or whether that be their race, ethnicity, religion? Where does the federal government have the ability to categorize people in any form of demographic and basically say all of these things are sexual orientation? Where are these things enumerated? Because if it is not enumerated, then the only force that those acts have are in the District of Columbia and legitimate territories that fall in pursuant to the Constitution. So legitimate territories would be Puerto Rico, Guam, and those types of places, Virgin Islands, that are actually within U.S. sovereign territories. But none of the land that is within the states is qualified as a territory. I want to be clear with this. Just because the federal government has a magazine or a military training base or so forth, they can dictate some behaviors, but they can't dictate the laws of the state. In other words, they can actually in place, you know, hiring and so forth. Now, I've been on the record stating that there needs to be, and I believe that this needs to be done at the state level, or the states that really need to be smart on this. But just let's be clear, what is our real problem here? Is racism a real problem, or is the federal government and its inability to stay within the boundaries of the Constitution and the fact that they have basically assumed everything that they're doing practically today is all unconstitutional? The point is that in 1866, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, and I think it was Andrew Johnson who was the president, because Lincoln had passed by this point, vetoed that bill or that act. Well, the first thing that they did, the first reaction that these radical Republicans did was they went, okay, well, let's overpower the veto. So they went back into chambers and they got enough votes to get a two-thirds majority in both houses. And they veto-proofed the act so that he couldn't veto it. Okay, so instantly that act got done. And that was like in February, late February. I don't remember the exact date, but I know I think the act was vetoed at the beginning of January or in January of 1866. And so they said, okay, well, we'll go back into chambers and we'll vote again and get two-thirds majority so he can't veto it. So they did it. And as soon as they were done, by the end of February, early March, they realized that they were laughingstocks because they knew that the act that they passed had no force within any state. They came to the realization that the only way they could actually create law to enforce upon the states, specifically the southern states, and all states to behave appropriately within the framework of this Constitution now, was to actually pass an amendment. So in breakneck speed, I want you to go look at the 14th Amendment. I want you to look at how many sections there are to the 14th Amendment and the details within this. Then I want you to go read all of the debates over the 14th Amendment and the fact that Congress, in just a matter of a couple of months, I think they started in March, they were done by May, I think it was ratified by both houses in June. So it's just, let's just say 4 months, right? March, April, May, and June. Let's say it took all 4 months to do that. Look at that amendment. Look at the discussions. Look at everything they did. And the fact that in 4 months, they had two-thirds majority that were capable of actually voting and passing and sending this 14th Amendment out to the states. Do you understand the ramifications here? They knew and they took serious the importance in basically applying to the states that they could not be tyrannical. Now, as the states started going down this path of creating laws that segregated people, and people ask me all the time, well, can they create, what do you think of the Jim Crow laws? You know, that, sometimes that's a bait type of question, but if you understand the Constitution, then you'd understand that any kind of laws like Jim Crow or segregation laws, those types of things, those are unconstitutional. And people go, well, how are they unconstitutional? You know, because there's people that are trying to defend them, and there's people that are trying to say, oh, those were wrong, and they don't know how. How are those wrong? Show me what a bill of attainder or bill of punishment is. When you start categorizing people in a specific class, whether that's by their race, ethnicity, culture, whatever the demographics are, and you start creating punishments and or start establishing standards or what, it's the same. This class of people have to ride in the back of the bus. This class of people can't be served with these. Separate but equal, that doctrine itself, separate but equal, is absolutely a violation of that. And then we also have to look at the Eighth Amendment when we come to, cruel and unusual punishment. This is not the land of segregating. This is the land of equal opportunity and equal access for all, an equal opportunity to fail as well as succeed. Okay? So it was worth going into this because I think sometimes people, need to hear these things because maybe we don't cover these enough. But we do cover bills of attainder. We do cover these things, and it's sometimes, I don't think it gets lost in the weeds. I just think sometimes we just get distracted by the shiny objects that seem to be, you know, demanding our attention. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
You know, bills of attainder and punishment cannot be applied towards any type of demographic. That includes religion, folks, or your health, your paradigm on health. You know, some people may not have a religious faith that says we do this or that, but they just believe that they shouldn't be, you know, trusting government's vaccinations, or that they shouldn't be just injecting crap into their body. It doesn't matter. A bill of attainder or punishment cannot be created to actually control and go after and punish people because they happen to believe, think, or be born a certain way, or they've converted to a faith. It doesn't matter. Now, there are, I mean, if you convert to Mohammedan, then all of a sudden you've adopted a faith that becomes antithetical to liberty. That's a little bit different. But all other faiths that actually embrace and, you know, endure, or I should say, yeah, embrace and love liberty, we'll just call it that, love and embrace liberty, well, those religions will thrive here. And I truly, when you look at the different religions around the world, there's many of them. Many of them do not believe that a person can be, you know, dragged into salvation, that a person must go willingly and informed, and they have to go and do it for themselves. The compulsion does not exist or belong anywhere in a free society, period. Okay, so the petitions that we have, I want to cover the land here, and I really apologize. I wanted to cover this faster, but I realized I had to bring up some points and issues to help people understand some of these things that we cover. And so this is regarding the state property and property resources. Remember, we talked about farmland. We talked about agricultural types of crops, whether that be forestry, what, regardless of things that come from the land. I'm not talking necessarily about minerals and those types of things. That's something separate, and that's something that has to be addressed as well. But let me be clear. There's nothing more essential than food. There's nothing more essential than the agricultural production of a fertile land and fertile nation like your state and like this republic. And the fact is, we have a government that is orchestrating. This goes right back to this insurgency I've been telling you about. When we have a government that is orchestrating and allowing a design for somebody else to control where our food goes and how it's sold, and they're subsidized. I mean, the fact that China owns so much of our food, are you kidding me? That is unconstitutional. So we have these petitions that kind of go through what we kind of covered before. And the first petition is to declare that all state land, not formally, when I say formally, I mean, under the formal jurisdiction, okay? So it's not under the formal jurisdiction of the Constitution and its 28 amendments and land resources. In other words, if it is a reservation, if it is a park, recreation, a reserve, whatever, forest, it doesn't matter. Those are not within the jurisdiction of the Constitution. In other words, it is not federal land. It is state land, which means that then it basically has to go immediately back to the states. That this type of land also cannot be sold by the states or owned/operated by any other government entity, including the federal government, without an amendment to the Constitution. And I'm telling you what, if the federal government came along and went to the states and said, we want foreign entities to buy your land, we want to allow that to happen, will you give us an amendment? Come on, folks, there's no way your state would have done this. There's no way your state would have allowed them to do this. They've been selling us downriver for a long time, for hundreds of years, literally going almost 200 years. Next petition, the states must formally abandon the CCC, which, what is the CCC? I got it right up here. It's the Commodity Credit Corporation. So they have to abandon this, and they have to abandon FEMA, that it is the state's responsibility to establish emergency storage for their own purposes, for their own state and for their own citizens. Because what's going to happen with the federal government? Those who control it will dictate whether you get a little stipend or not. And it's far better off having 50 states doing this, because guess what? We can count on California being very manipulative and actually violating the Constitution, because, again, if they pass a law that says, you don't get this because of your race, your political affiliation, what have you, then, hey, it looks like you get to starve. And they can't do that. Those types of laws are illegal, folks. States must formally abandon these emergency and storage, as well as energy. You have to start creating your own resources so that you have the ability to provide for your own people. States also, the next petition, states must incentivize and promote family farming and declare family farms, like small businesses, as the backbone of their economy and states' strategic interests. They need to be clear. They need to state that the small businesses, just like, or the family farms, just like small businesses, are the backbone of their economy and critical to their strategic interests. You can't grow food, you can't feed yourself. There are areas in the United States, in the extended United States, that can't actually feed itself. They just don't have the ability to feed the population they have. I'll give you two examples. Hawaii has a hard time. Hawaii does not have the means to be able to grow enough beef and food and so forth for all the people that live there. So they have to import a lot of their food. Well, okay, so some of that stuff has to be kind of reconciled through relationships with other states, but it should not be reconciled with the federal government. The federal government has no jurisdiction in being involved in these things. The next one, that the general government does not possess the authority to authorize the sale of any property or asset of the Union, in other words, any of the United States, to any foreign entity or foreign individual. The next one, federal subsidies to pay a farmer or a business of any kind to not be productive are not within the Constitution and is tantamount to waging economic warfare against the state. The next petition. Any land that is owned by a foreign entity or foreign person will be served notice that their land sale was not a legitimate transaction under the Constitution for the United States, and that the land will go into conservatorship to determine what its disposition and basically what I'm trying to say here is what is its disposition and where it will end up. But it will not remain in the hands and in the control of foreign entities, period. Now, foreign entities, I want to add this, because foreign entities can actually say, okay, well, we ask that you kind of give it to these people, and these people will then have the responsibility to kind of pay for or reimburse that foreign entity for what they paid for it. As if that's even possible. The bottom line, folks, it's not my fault that these foreign entities knowingly came in and said, we're going to buy out America right out from underneath them, and they don't even know what's hitting them, and be involved in this kind of warfare. This is straight out warfare. And I tell people, this goes right down to, there was no way it would have been constitutional for the framers to allow Britain to do the same thing right after we fought the Revolutionary War, because Britain was trying to do it. That's why we passed the 13th Amendment, folks. The 13th Amendment is the nobility amendment that does not allow anybody to be a part of the British Bar Association legal system to be a U.S. citizen or to vote. You lose your citizenship if you're in the bar. And the 13th Amendment is a legitimate amendment. This is why we say 28 amendments. Anyway, the next, because we got a lot of petitions just over this one subcategory as far as state property and resources. Any non-resident U.S. citizen or state resident who chooses not to use the potential land for, and I've just basically put this in here, for agricultural harvesting. They could be harvesting food. You could be harvesting hemp. You know, things that aren't necessarily food products, but you know, trees, what have you. And basically, these resources or this land that is left to be unproductive, then the states can authorize others within the state, like you know, families that want to have their own little family farm for the year. They you know just go and do that, or let's say a church. Let's say a group of people, a collective group of people, want to have a little communal farm, and there's farmland that's not being used. They will have to pay for the water. They'll have to pay for the resources that they may have to use. Now, I don't think, you know, if they have electricity or something like that, that means that they just have to put a sub panel out there so that whatever they use, they, you know, will pay for to do that. But the land itself will and can be made productive by the state legislature. The state legislature cannot allow land, especially if they assume this responsibility to actually take care of their people and make sure that they have silage and food reserves and to be able to function in an emergency capacity, then they have the interest of making sure these things happen. Why is it that our silage is empty, our food shelves are empty as well, and we're being told that there's going to be food shortages when supposedly we're supposed to trust the federal government with the CCC? Folks, we got one more little petition here, and we'll get into this when we get back in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point
where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.